Welcome to the Curious Women Podcast. I'm your host, Kylie Fignano, and I'm here with my co-host, Meg Hager. Here, we're going to have chats about women's health to teach you the things that you didn't know you didn't know.
Thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited. Okay, so Jillian, would you like to introduce yourself and just tell our listeners a little bit about you and a little bit about the work you do?
Yeah, I would love to. So my name is Jillian Greaves. I'm a functional medicine dietitian and women's health specialist based in Boston, Massachusetts. And I have a virtual private practice. So I primarily work with women that are dealing with a variety of hormone and digestive health issues. And specifically, I work a lot with women that have PCOS or deal with things like really extreme PMS, PMDD, kind of menstrual cycle issues or problems. And really where I come in is helping women kind of do that deeper investigative work in terms of understanding what's going on in their body and helping them to support those things naturally with things like nutrition, lifestyle, supplementation.
Oh, so good. That. I have so many questions already. And yeah. I think I want to preface this. This episode might be a really great one if you have teenagers in your life who are maybe just learning about this stuff. Or rather, I guess more appropriately, if you've got teenagers in your life and you who were never taught what's happening in your body every single month, then this would be a really great one to share with them. Or to send them or to direct them to listen, because I think it'll be a nice, my hope here, Jillian, is that we can ask you a bunch of questions that really women should be taught. And it's unfortunate at this point, we really can't learn it from our mothers or from the women in our lives because they weren't taught either.
Yep. Right.
So it's Kylie, just one of those things.
You said this once, it's the health class we never got.
It's the health class we never got and that we all didn't know we needed. So
exactly. So,
I'm excited.
And I actually, in a PCOS group program that I run, this week was actually teaching about mastering your menstrual cycle and talking about a lot of this stuff. And, you know, the women were just floored and everyone was why are we not learning these things in middle school and high school? And I've started saying, you know, when I talk about these things, this is everything you should have learned when you were, you know, 12, 14 years old. It's just wild. So,
wow.
So guys, we're approximately like 14 years late for me, but that's all right. We'll learn it now. And if anyone else had a situation where your mom didn't give you the talk either, my mom did not. So this is welcome to health class that we never had at the age of 14.
I have to tell you guys, my health class, our teacher made all of us sit there. This was in sixth grade. And she made us all say the word penis out loud together as a class. If that was the thing we needed the most, to get comfortable saying the word penis. And she was this very old woman. And she would say, repeat after me, penis. As if it was difficult to pronounce, you had to do it slowly. It was terrible. That was our health class.
You know, sometimes I still can't say the word penis with a straight face. I don't know how a sixth grader is expected to do it.
Oh, the boys lost it. Out for the count.
Oh, my God. Kylie, I know you and I have so many questions. And so before we get to the real bread and butter here, the most important question, Miss Jillian, is what are you drinking?
Oh, what do I have right here? So I have, do you know what Bumble Root is?
Bumble root.
So this is water. And then I mix in Bumble Root powder, which is like my favorite mineral powder. And it has, so this is the turmeric ginger blend. So it has turmeric ginger, like black pepper in it. But it's made with coconut water powder and it has like 900 milligrams of potassium. It has a little magnesium, has some whole food vitamin C. So a nice little, mineral blend to support the adrenals and energy in the afternoon, and it just tastes absolutely amazing. So,
and the name Bumble Root, that's like I want whatever it is, Bumble Root. That's great.
That's so lovely.
So it doesn't taste, you know, even though it's the coconut water powder, it doesn't taste coconutty. So it really has a very mild flavor. They have also a hibiscus mint flavor, hibiscus like raspberry mint, that is incredible.
Wow, that's amazing. Oh my gosh. I think we lost Kylie for a second, but she'll jump back in. There we go.
I'm looking at it right now. Bumble
oh my God. I can't wait to try it. Thank you so much for that.
That's great. See, this is why we do this.
I know. Right? I'm like so important. Anyway.
It's so great. It's okay. Kylie, Meg, what do you have?
I, at the request of one of our listeners, I'm trying the Tazo chamomile tea, which I'm a big fan of chamomile. I also have a cup of coffee next to me, though. I always do this. I always do that. Got the coffee and then something to like bring me down a notch, you know?
There is one dietitian that I know of that doesn't end their day with four beverage containers next to them.
I saw your stories the other day and I died. For those of you who don't know, Kylie had a very funny Instagram story the other day where she, at the end of her day, she panned across her windowsill and there was literally like 8 empty glasses
always. And actually, they're never empty. They're always like half full or like one
That's
sip.
True. Yeah,
like
this yeah they much. Did have.
By the time I get to that last sip, I'm like, I guess I'm all set. Like, what?
I'm done. We're good. Yeah, we're totally. Totally. Anyway. So what are you drinking today? You're not half done. You're not, you're like that last sip yet, I imagine.
No, not I there have, yet. No. I've got Four Sigmatic coffee, which is my favorite coffee. I love it. Mm-hmm. I always put my collagen in it, and that's great. But I put some green banana flour in it today too
for
some.
I'm sorry. Research. What?
Some green green banana flour. So so many of my clients, I recommend this for them to get resistant starches, and I thought
this
to
is
myself,
genius.
Maybe I'll just try it in my coffee if I put some creamer in it, which I normally just drink it black. I bet that would actually be okay. It's not okay. It's not delicious.
Bummer.
I don't so love sad. It. And then Brian and I got this A2 milk, but a new kind that it's not the A2 brand, which is our favorite. This one, it separates, like the cream separates, and it doesn't matter how much you shake the damn thing. That stuff doesn't go back together. So now we've got like half liquid, half just like pure cream, and it's not ideal. So that's what I have it. It's not good. I'm going to drink it, but it's not. I'm not happy with it. Well, I'm happy with the Four Sigmatic. I'll put yes to that, but nothing else.
Well, listen, at least you're committed. That's a commitment to drink, to have that much go wrong with your coffee for the day and you're sticking by it. That's a commitment.
It's not my first coffee. That's the important piece. I would never go rogue on the first coffee of the day. oh my God. Gosh. All right. I'm ready for questioning. Can I do this?
Absolutely. Do please. This? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's
so
go.
So here are the things that I feel I think are important to get to. And we could do this in any fashion. But in the beginning, you were mentioning a bunch of acronyms, and I just want you to briefly go through what those are so that people have an idea of, first of all, what the heck you're talking about, and secondly, have a little bit of an idea if what they are feeling actually has a name so that they might then be better guided into what to do. So that's one piece. I think a really important thing today would be, can you explain to us what is your cycle? What is actually happening? There are names, there are terms, and we don't have to go super, super deep level. You can if you want. But I want people who don't get this education to understand, okay, every month when I feel these things, this is why. These are some of the hormones that are doing some of these things, and therefore, these action items that we would also like for you to share with us is why it can be helpful and just sort of mesh all that together. I think I just asked 47 questions, but I wanted to set the stage because I'm just going to kind of let you go.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So where should I
take start? Us on a journey?
Okay. Should I take us on a journey and yes, start with definitions.
Okay. So some of the things that I had referenced, thank you for stopping me. I have a tendency to just kind of, you know, dive into the weeds. So
please do. We're here for it. I got my seatbelt on. We're ready.
So PCOS that I mentioned is stands for or is an acronym for polycystic ovarian syndrome. So this is a syndrome, a condition that impacts an estimated 1 in 10 women, U.S. adults, and it is a metabolic and endocrine disorder that is associated with irregular cycles and elevated male hormones or androgens. Women have them too. We kind of refer to them as male hormones. But in women with PCOS or polycystic ovarian syndrome, these hormones are higher than they should be, and they can contribute to unpleasant symptoms like, you know, hair loss, unwanted hair growth, you know, irregular cycles, you know, cystic acne. So that's, you know, polycystic ovarian syndrome sort of in a, you know, the quick and dirty there. And then PMS. So most women are probably familiar with PMS or premenstrual, you know, syndrome. And that is really when you experience kind of unpleasant symptoms that pop up cyclically, usually in the 1 to 2 weeks before you actually get your period. The other thing that I mentioned, and we'll be talking a lot about, you know, some of that. The other thing that I mentioned was PMDD, which is premenstrual dysphoric disorder. That's a mouthful. And that is kind of like PMS on steroids. So it's like, you know, much more severe PMS, and it's associated with like very, very significant shifts with mood and irritability. So kind of the more severe form of PMS.
Hmm. Yeah.
For all of you sitting there thinking, oh no, keep listening. It will be okay. Solutions are coming.
We're going to do this together.
Right. Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Perfect. So then I think, can you go into day one of your cycle? When is that? What's happening? And kind of take us through and insert where somebody might be experiencing some of these acronyms that you just explained.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So let's kind of start from the beginning then. So in terms of the entire menstrual cycle, we kind of break it up into sort of four distinct phases. So we have menstruation, we have the follicular phase, we have the ovulatory phase or ovulation, and then we have the luteal phase. So those are kind of the four phases of the menstrual cycle. And what we can do is just kind of break down each phase and talk about what's happening and what you might expect or what you might experience.
Yes,
so,
please. You know what's funny though, is I've been putting the wrong emphasis on luteal. So I've been saying luteal. No, Jillian says it luteal. And I've heard it luteal way more than I've heard it the way that I say it. So please continue. I just wanted all my friends to know out there that I have been pronouncing it wrong.
You're such an aristocrat. My goodness.
I'm just over here reinventing our entire language. It's fine.
I love it. I'm here for it. So starting with menstruation. So menstruation is the portion of the menstrual cycle that I think people are most familiar with. So menstruation is the bleeding phase of your cycle, aka your period. So essentially when fertilization does not occur, meaning you don't get pregnant, your body sheds its uterine lining. So the shedding of the uterine lining is when you have your period and you are bleeding. Typically that's going to last anywhere from like 3 to 7 days for most people on average. So that's sort of the menstruation phase in a nutshell. And the first day of kind of full bleeding, that's what we consider to be day one of your menstrual cycle. So if someone asks you, when was the first day of your last period or when was day one of your menstrual cycle, you would think about the first day of your last period where it was a full bleed and it wasn't just a little bit of spotting.
Okay, that's okay. Very helpful for people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good to know. Good distinction.
So during the menstruation phase is when overall hormone levels are very, very low. So at their lowest, hormone levels basically drop. We'll talk about that in a minute, but which is going to stimulate the shedding of the uterine lining. So during menstruation or your period, overall hormone levels are really low. And this is typically when women will often feel tired, a little bit more brain foggy, just kind of overall less energy, a lot more introverted. And it's really a combination of just overall low levels of hormones. And when I'm talking about hormones in the menstrual cycle, I'm specifically talking about sex hormones. So estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone being kind of the three key players there. And then, pituitary hormones, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But basically, overall sex hormones are very low at this time. And, sex hormones are involved in more than just, kind of regulating the menstrual cycle. They impact, the brain and cognition and energy and libido. So when all of these things are low, we're going to feel it. And when we're, actually bleeding and shedding the uterine lining, we're losing blood, we're losing iron, we're losing minerals. So that additionally can just really kind of zap our energy. And, it's often a lower point in the cycle for most women. Mm-hmm. What I always like to kind of tell women, and I should have even mentioned this kind of prior to diving in and talking about the phases of the cycle, is that, most women kind of view their menstrual cycle and periods as kind of like a nuisance or some, an Achilles heel, something that's holding them back from, doing things that they want to do. And it's just bothersome. And what I really like to talk about is, and really like to do with clients is, figure out how we can use these cyclical shifts and sort of lean into hormonal shifts and kind of use these things as more of a superpower, right? To be able to lean into
things. I love that. Yes, I love that.
Yeah, and just, kind of taking advantage of these cyclical shifts. And I think we oftentimes like beat ourselves up or make ourselves feel guilty because, we feel different and, energetically, we feel different in terms of like mood and cognition. We don't really understand what's going on internally. So we, kind of place guilt on ourselves when in reality, women are not small men. We have very different things going on with hormones cyclically. And I think once we can really understand what's going on internally, we can sort of harness the power of our hormones and kind of use them to our advantage. During the menstruation phase, that is a time where I think, we can really just give ourselves permission to rest, to... Yeah, right? Just to rest, to take it easy. When it comes to things like movement, let yourself skip the gym, maybe going on some gentle walks or things like that. But, in that situation, forcing yourself to work out, high intensity movement is not going to produce any type of a benefit when your body is really kind of needing rest and repletion. So during the menstruation phase, I really encourage a lot of rest. From a food perspective, I really encourage focusing on, warming foods, soups, stews, like anti-inflammatory foods, like your fatty fish, ginger, turmeric, berries, focusing on iron-rich foods. If you eat animal foods, focusing on your, high-quality beef. If you're kind of a plant-focused person, incorporating dark leafy greens, lentils, things like that. And really just sort of repleting those minerals, hydrating. That's a really great focus kind of during the menstruation phase.
When I'm on my period, I do feel a twinge of that. Are you allowing your period to let you feel lazy? But that's not it at all, is it? Because I don't ever regret not doing it. I feel best not pushing myself and going for a walk or doing a stretch or something like that. So I think that's really an important part for people listening to remember. You're doing that to yourself. And you therefore can choose to do something differently by thinking about it as honoring where you are instead of feeling like it's, like you said, Jillian, a nuisance.
Yeah.
Huge. That shift is huge.
Yeah. And even to get, you know, a little bit more micro, or not, I don't want to get too into the weeds, but to your point about, you know, exercise too, and that like twinge of guilt, you know, right before and during your period, during menstruation, the body is producing high amounts of prostaglandins. So prostaglandins being these inflammatory molecules that cause the uterus to contract, and for, you know, that promote the shedding of the uterine lining. So there is a lot more inflammation at play during this time. And when you think about it, higher intensity exercise is inflammatory, right?
Yeah.
And in the right context, that type of inflammation can be supportive and adaptive and improve our resilience. In the wrong context, right? Context is king. When in the wrong context, when, you know, there's already more inflammation at play, the body's producing higher amounts of these inflammatory molecules. If we're trying to force ourselves through like rigorous exercise that's inducing more inflammation, it, you know, it's like throwing gasoline on the fire, and you're not really reaping the benefits of that workout anyway. It's just throwing a ton of stress on the body.
Totally.
That's huge. So, in fact, to think about it in a way and to feel guilty about something is actually simply to just be uninformed and choose to believe a feeling rather than the actual fact. Fact being, your body is already more inflamed, and to create more inflammation is actually doing more harm than good. And, you know, presumably when you want to work out, you're trying to take care of yourself and do something healthy. And if that's the angle that you're looking for, the solution based on facts, right? We're taking the emotion out of this, mm-hmm. is that you need to rest, mm-hmm. or do something less intense. It doesn't mean you need to be lazy or do nothing, but less intense. Okay, that's important. All right, so this is menstruating. This is this is maybe like one of four, right?
Yep. Yeah, so that's kind of the what kickstarts the, you know, the start of the menstrual cycle. And then after our period ends, we move into the follicular phase. So that's the period of time after the period ends up until ovulation, which is around mid-cycle. So during the follicular phase, this is essentially where pituitary hormones in the brain are sending messages to the ovaries to start to mature a follicle. A follicle being a little sac on the ovaries that contains an egg. So the brain is telling the ovaries to, you know, mature these follicles, and estrogen levels specifically start to really ramp up and increase throughout the follicular phase. So really, really low during menstruation, and then we start to see estrogen levels increase and rise. We also start to see testosterone rise a little bit alongside that. So this is what is essentially, so the estrogen increasing is what is causing that thickening of the uterine lining and preparing the body for potential pregnancy and implantation.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how are we feeling during this point for most people? I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it depends what's happening. But for most people, when things are fairly well balanced, this is a time where we start to experience a lot more energy. And typically we feel more creative, more extroverted, mm-hmm. more social. And, you know, that's really the benefit of these hormones ramping up specifically. And that's an opportunity to sort of, you know, kind of take advantage of those things in terms of, you know, doing things that require more energy or creativity, or, you know, working on big projects or, you know, big presentations, things like that. So typically women are feeling pretty good during that time period. During the follicular phase, women are also more insulin sensitive, meaning the body is a little bit, it's able to utilize glucose or sugar from the carbohydrates that we eat a little bit better. So we have a little bit more metabolic flexibility. And this is a time period where, if this is something that feels good for your body, something that you enjoy, this is a time where we can challenge ourselves in the gym. We can, you know, do a workout that requires more energy. And typically that's where we're really going to be able to incorporate those things within a very healthy, health promoting context.
Yes. Okay.
And so where does this leave us as far as nutrition? Is there supportive nutrition for this phase too?
Yeah. So typically, you know, what I recommend focusing on, you know, with specifics during the follicular phase. And one thing I do want to mention and kind of taking a step back is, you know, if anyone listening is sort of brand new to making, you know, nutrition changes, it can feel a little overwhelming to get very micro-focused on a lot of foods. Mm-hmm. So first and foremost, start from, you know, where you're at today. And if you're working on the basics, like, you know, eating consistent meals and eating well-rounded meals, start there. That's most important. But once you've kind of built a supportive foundation with food, then you can get a little bit more micro-focused with supporting yourself during different phases. So the focus during the follicular phase is really about supporting healthy estrogen metabolism. So as these estrogen levels ramp up, we want to make sure that we're supporting the systems and the organs that need to actually break down, metabolize, and eliminate estrogen from the body. When women are symptomatic later in the follicular phase, it is usually related to issues with estrogen. So we can kind of combat that by focusing on foods that support specifically the breakdown of estrogen in the liver and that support the gut, since that's a big pathway of elimination for estrogen. So some things that can be great to focus on are things like cruciferous vegetables, which are things like your broccoli sprouts, cabbage, arugula, bok choy. So these cruciferous vegetables contain compounds that help estrogen metabolism or estrogen breakdown in the liver. Other things that can be really helpful are high quality protein sources. So B vitamins from protein, amino acids from protein helps to also support the liver with breaking down estrogen. I don't know about you guys, but most women I work with really struggle with protein.
Join the club. Me, yeah. I don't love protein foods. I just don't like, you know, I don't know. Anyway, didn't mean to interrupt you. Just really felt that hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people do. Yeah. I think that's a common thing.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that's definitely something to focus on. Also things that support the gut. So like fermented foods are really amazing. They're amazing anytime, but you know, if we're really talking about the follicular phase and things that can help the liver, the gut, and with, you know, estrogen, fermented foods are incredible. So, you know, those are just a couple things that can be helpful, from a food perspective.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I love that.
So follicular phase, guys, as a quick recap, what's happening there is that estrogen levels are coming up. And so the focus with food is supporting the things in the body that have to then deal with the estrogen. Mm-hmm. That's your liver, that's your gut. And that's why the recommendations are what she's saying, just so that you guys all connect this. This is not arbitrary advice, right? Mm-hmm. I want people to understand, because for some people, eating more cruciferous vegetables is going to be a really big challenge, or it's just simply a pain in the ass. Like, it's going to be some foods that they don't like. And I think that when you really understand why the advice is being given and in which ways it can help, it can tend to be a little bit more motivating. In fact, let me ask you, Jillian, if somebody is symptomatic during this phase, what does that look like or feel like? What might somebody be feeling?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the big things I will see typically are towards the end of the follicular phase, so as we're approaching ovulation, when estrogen levels are really, you know, kind of getting towards their peak, women will start experiencing skin issues. So often, you know, it could be things like breakouts. It could be mood related issues, and also even things like bloating, and kind of gut related things going on. But I feel like mostly what I'm seeing, is kind of skin issues, mood related issues. And then, yeah, bloating would be another one.
Okay. Huge. Mm-hmm. So if you are all listening and in the weeks kind of following your period, this is how you're feeling, then refer back to those certain recommendations that could be very, very supportive, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now we've had the menstruation, we have the menstrual phase, we have the follicular phase. What comes next?
So next we have ovulation, or the ovulatory phase. And ovulation is basically when, so I had mentioned in the follicular phase, we have, you know, these follicles on the ovaries that contain, you know, eggs that are developing throughout the follicular phase. At the end of the follicular phase, basically what happens is estrogen hits a peak. And when estrogen hits sort of this certain threshold, it stimulates something called an LH surge, which is, it's another one of those pituitary hormones. And this LH surge basically stimulates the release of that egg from the follicle. So you ovulate, your body actually releases an egg. Ovulation is sort of like it's a one day all or nothing event. So it's really not a phase in that it doesn't span over a long period of time. It sort of occurs over, you know, happens on one day and it either happens or it doesn't. It's like a very sort of black and white thing. Okay. And it's stimulated by estrogen peaking, which causes a luteinizing hormone surge, and then the body releases an egg.
For those of you, if anyone listening is actively tracking your cycle, or you have before, those fertility strips that you pee on, that's the hormone that it's measuring, right? Yes. Is the luteinizing hormone. So just to connect that.
Finish your thought.
I was going to say, so people refer to them as like ovulation test strips or LH strips, because you can pick up on that surge, which tells you that you're basically about to ovulate.
Mm-hmm. So I want to ask one. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry, Kylie. Go ahead.
We might be asking the same question, actually.
Okay. Go ahead.
I want you to be clear about when you're capable of getting pregnant, because it's right in this phase, right? Mm-hmm. Right in this, like, window of time.
Yep.
I ask with a slight question mark myself. I think that's right. You tell us.
It is. So yeah, what a lot of women are also not told, surprise, surprise, is that there's really only about a 6-day window that you can actually get pregnant.
Wait, I need to stop you right there, because this is something that Kylie and I have joked about before. It's like, I was taught, and I'm sure many other women were, that if a man breathed on me, I could get pregnant at any point in time. So I just need you to really explain. This is about 6 days. We're not talking like you can't be breathed on by somebody and have there's a baby in there.
No, which is wild. And it's funny. I think a lot of women, I won't speak for everyone, but a lot of women spend a big chunk of their life like trying to avoid getting pregnant, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, we're terrified because we, you know, I was in the same boat and, you know, thought that it could happen at any time. And you know, then you actually try to get pregnant and realize like, oh, it's actually maybe a little bit harder than I thought.
Gosh.
So in terms of the fertile window, so yeah, there's a six day window that we can get pregnant. And basically that is going to be, that 6-day window is going to start 3 to 4 days before you ovulate. And then the couple days after, outside of that, you can't get pregnant. It's not possible.
Oh my gosh. So let's just say this with an air of caution too, for our younger listeners and even our older ones, it does not mean you don't have to be careful, right? Like it's not, but it really does speak to the benefit of tracking your cycle so that you know these things. You have the power to make these decisions, and whatever the best decision for you is your choice, and that is totally fine. But if you were curious about, like, this is what people call the natural method, right, as far as like birth control and stuff.
Fertility awareness method, or FAM, is you know, kind of this you know, you're tracking basal body temperature, you're monitoring cervical mucus, and you're using these different indicators to identify your fertile window to either time intercourse for getting pregnant or for pregnancy prevention. When FAM is used properly, it's very, very effective. Don't quote me on this, but it's something like 99.4% effective at preventing pregnancy.
That's pretty high.
It is, but it does, you know, like anything else, it has to be done, you know, well and accurately to be reliable. And it's not for everyone, and that's okay.
Right.
You know, I think Being on hormonal birth control was a big part of my kind of personal health journey. And at the end of the day, actually ended up creating, you know, some health issues for me. But I'm very grateful for the time that I was on birth control in college and, you know, not having to, you know, I would not have been a reliable person to be doing BBT tracking and monitoring all these things when I was 21 years old. So, you know, I think it's important to be realistic, you know, if you're trying to prevent pregnancy around, you know, what you're going to use accurately for prevention.
Totally. Great point.
Super effective. You know, it's a tool that I, you know, use with a lot of my clients and use personally, but it's not for everyone and that's okay.
Right. Yeah, that's okay. Great. I think the important thing there is simply knowing that it exists as an option.
Yeah.
And that's the piece of the conversation, I think, in a lot of our experiences that is missing, where you're asked to make a big choice, or sometimes you're not even asked, but you're not actually given all of the options that should be on the table. So there you have it. That's an option. If you're more curious about that, you know, you can dig into some of that, into some of that and start looking and seeing, hey, yeah, this is the right thing. Yeah. Or no, thank you for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think understanding and knowing what's happening in your body so that you know what potentially could happen in your body is extremely powerful, period.
Most of it. Did you see what you did there?
I'm all about the puns.
I'm loving it. Okay. So let's, so we have one more phase left, right? Or did we get them all? We did ovulation.
Oh no, we have one, right? Yeah, one more phase.
Yeah.
And, okay. And couple things to just mention about ovulation. In terms of how women typically feel during ovulation, you know, if things are well balanced, typically this is also kind of an extension of the follicular phase where we experience pretty good energy. You know, great mood and, you know, things are you know, feeling pretty good, then the libido is really high around ovulation.
These bitches are thirsty, is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You have to tell the story of what your husband said to you the other day.
Oh, my God. Oh,
so
yeah.
Funny.
It was so funny. Okay, so I just said he was wearing this really nice blue shirt. It's a really nice color blue. I love the way it looks on him. It's so cute. And I was just like, you look very sexy today. And he was like, are you sure you're not just, what did you call it? You where the women do the thing and they're like really like thirsty. And I'm like, ovulating? And he's like, yeah, are you sure you're not just ovulating?
Oh my God.
And I thought that was
so good.
This is amazing to me. One, because yes, I truly might have been ovulating when this happened. So I think it's very funny. But two is that he was listening. I was giving him my daily lecture about the differences between the women's body and men's body. And he listened.
He was taking notes. That's adorable.
He gets super hubby points to the max. So anyway, yes.
That's that amazing.
I'm sorry.
It was a story worth.
That was important. That was an important pause. But yeah, feeling pretty good, feeling thirsty around ovulation, and so that's a time to kind of, you know, continue with workouts if they're feeling good, and you know, kind of continuing with that same food focus. You know, I think around that time too, you know, fiber intake, you know, again, anything that's going to really help with estrogen is a good focus. And then we move into the luteal phase. And actually something I should point out too is that, you know, a lot of times when we're talking about, you know, the menstrual cycle or just even ovulation, we are only thinking about like fertility and getting pregnant. But I always like to drive home that, you know, these kind of cyclical shifts and ovulation and the menstrual cycle as a whole, these things are important just for our overall health and well-being. You know, in 2015 was when, you know, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists and another like organization recommended the menstrual cycle be used as a fifth vital sign for women because it is such an important indicator of health. and you know, alongside pulse and temperature, all of these different things where, you know, the menstrual cycle, what's happening, having a ovulating regularly, the hormones that are produced, they have a really big impact on health, and they are a reflection of, kind of what's going on internally.
Wow. That's incredible. I mean, that's very powerful.
I ladies. Love that. Yes. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Amazing. Wow. Really amazing.
Okay. Yeah, I think it was. Yeah. I'm trying to remember, I'm forgetting what the other organization was. It was a pediatric one. So it was, kind of for young females, older females, that recommendation was made. So it's pretty cool.
It's amazing. That's yeah. Really cool.
Yeah. So then we move into the luteal phase. Basically after we ovulate, the follicle that releases the egg collapses on itself and creates something called the corpus luteum, which starts to produce the hormone progesterone. So progesterone is the star of the show in the luteal phase in terms of sex hormones. We only produce progesterone after we ovulate. So that's why, and progesterone is really important for pregnancy and supporting implantation, but it's also important for our overall health. Progesterone is like the hormone that everyone wants more of because it's kind of like the calming hormone. It balances out estrogen. So it's a really important hormone, and it's a bit more, dominant in the luteal phase. So in the luteal phase, the pituitary hormones that I mentioned, LH and FSH, kind of sharply drop off. Estrogen and testosterone start to, slowly decline. And progesterone is the hormone that's really, kind of kicking and dominant. Some interesting things happen during the luteal phase that I think are so important for women to know about that can make such a huge difference in how you approach kind of like life and your health. Those few things being, one, our resting metabolic rate actually increases during the luteal phase. So we are burning more energy at rest. We require more energy. Exactly, right? I find that often women, we're hungrier. And there's like a hesitance to respond to that. And instead it's that self-guilt situation. Like, why am I so hungry? And, so there are reasons for that. One of them being we do require more energy during that time related to progesterone. And then also during that time, our bodies, our cells become less sensitive to insulin. So again, insulin being that hormone that helps the body utilize glucose. So if our cells are not as sensitive to insulin, that means we're more prone to kind of big swings up and down with blood sugar. So we're more prone to high blood sugar, we're more prone to low blood sugar. And, if any of you have kind of experienced what that feels like, if we're kind of riding the blood sugar roller coaster and things are swinging, that's where we can experience a lot of kind of dips and crashes with energy, a lot of mood swings and irritability, big amplifications with anxiety, lots of sugar cravings. So, it's not just kind of in our head. These are actually things going on in the body, physiologically. So we need more energy, and the body is, more prone to these swings in blood sugar. Does that make sense?
Oh my gosh. Wait a minute.
I think it's so validating to people.
I agree. I agree. And I also want to just highlight what you said about there are physiological reasons for these things happening. So when sometimes people joke about like, oh, she's just being crazy, or she's over worrying, or all the things that, you could say that about anybody, I'm sure, but there is kind of a stigma, I guess, toward people who identify as women, at least. And and I think that that's really validating. I love that.
Yeah.
I feel validated.
Yeah.
Because I say this about myself. I feel like I'm going insane. I feel like I'm going insane. I am not a joy. I'm not a joy.
Yeah.
You're always a joy. You stop that.
Ryan would beg to differ.
I'll send Jason over to give him some menstrual cycle classes.
some of his sexy blue shirt. Actually, before you go on, Jillian, I want to say this is really, this is very funny. Also worth interrupting for. I also was trying to teach Brian the phases so that there was a little bit of context, right? I was feeling defensive and I wanted him to understand why I was feeling so. And I was talking to him about this particular phase and how, you know, there's usually lower energy and blah, blah, blah. And he said to me the other night, "Are you looting? Because I think you might be looting."
Oh my God.
And then he said, "I feel tired. Maybe I am looting. Oh yes, I am looting." And closed his eyes and went to take a nap. I am looting. It's now a verb, you guys. Are you looting? I cried. I laughed so hard.
That's a great story.
So funny.
Oh. What is wrong with you? Are you
looting? Tell him we're going to steal that.
It's real. I think it sums it up really well, though.
I agree.
It back to your point, I mean, this is a thing. This is how, anyway, I'll let you finish your
Oh, no, I love this. And I think it's so cool, too, to get partners involved, you know,
yeah.
And just, like, fill them in and what's going on. And I think it's important for, you know, partners to be aware of what we're going through. And, you know, that way we can adapt with communication and those types.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be an excuse, right? Like the way that I see it, like, I don't want to say, "Oh, I'm PMSing and therefore it doesn't matter what I say or how I act." Right. That's not what we're saying. I think it's actually the opposite. We want everybody to understand, ourselves included, understand what's going on so that you can better take care of yourself, better support yourself, and then you don't have so much of those swings, those ups and downs. Not to say that they won't still happen, because there's really no way about it. When things are balanced, that is the natural way. Mm-hmm. But to have an understanding of how you can support those changes, that's the conversation here. That's the action. That's then also the communication that you can share with a partner, your siblings, your parents, dare I say your father. I mean, you know, I mean, honestly, my dad was the king of knowing which tampons to buy. The one with the butterfly.
I love that.
I mean, he's got four daughters, so there was no option really.
He needed to know. So,
go ahead. I think to your point, you know, just having more awareness, I think it's empowering. And it doesn't mean that we're not going to experience any, you know, shifts at all in how we feel. And I think it's normal to feel shifts. Certainly if these things are really severe, it's likely, you know, a way that your body's communicating with you that something might be off. And there's, like, we're talking about things that you can do to support more stability. But these natural shifts are very normal. And I think having awareness is empowering. And I think it helps us to just even pause and think and communicate better. And, you know, everyone's happier all around.
I love that.
A couple other, I think, important or cool things to mention about what's sort of happening in the body at that time, too, specific to mood. So with kind of entering the luteal phase, so serotonin and dopamine levels actually drop. So that's another thing where, you know, these are neurotransmitters that are impacting, you know, mood and calm and things like that. So there's some big shifts happening in the body that can impact the mood. There's the blood sugar stuff. And, you know, I just think it's really important to be aware of these things. Progesterone too, even though it's a really, you know, kind of incredible hormone, it also causes fluid retention. It also causes smooth muscles to relax, which can impact motility in the gut. And a lot of women will end up being a little bit more constipated, you know, kind of pre-period. So I just think it's, again, important to be aware of these things. And then there's definitely all sorts of tools for supporting those things.
Yeah. Speaking of tools, I know you have an entire platform to help women walk through each of these phases, and we will definitely make sure to highlight that. But for those, just for our takeaways for the luteal phase, what are your top, like, support recommendations for that phase?
Yeah. So don't skimp on carbs. If you're under eating carbs, your body is going to be screaming at you. And that's where we end up with like the super intense, you know, carb sugar cravings. So eat carbs, eat them consistently, eat enough, you know, maybe focus a little bit more so on, you know, kind of slow carbs in terms of things that are rich in fiber and can help support blood sugar stability a little bit more. Carbohydrates can also help with that neurotransmitter, you know, production in terms of, you know, some of those things that drop off and impact our mood. So I think, you know, eating carbohydrates consistently, focusing on, you know, fiber rich sources, and pairing those with protein again, to really promote that, that blood sugar stability. So really, really honing in and focusing on blood sugar stability, eating consistently. If we're going, you know, if the pattern of eating is erratic, we're going super long periods of time without eating, all of these things are going to be amplified and your body's going to be screaming at you. So it's all about just like keeping, you know, making the body feel safe and supported and stable and nourished, you know, with consistent eating, well-rounded meals, you know, that would really be, I think, my primary recommendation and the thing that usually makes, you know, sort of the biggest difference for women. You know, certainly there's, you know, kind of specific foods and things you can focus on, you know, incorporating more like magnesium rich foods, you know, which can be really helpful for premenstrual symptoms, you know, and for mood, incorporating potassium rich foods, which can help if you experience like a little bit of fluid or bloating. I typically recommend being mindful of how caffeine and alcohol make you feel during the luteal phase. You know, everyone's different, but we can be a little bit more sensitive to those things. So just, you know, thinking about how those make your body feel as well.
Wow. Yeah.
Now that we've gone through all of the cycles, can you share anything about seed cycling? Is this well researched? Do we know that it helps, or is it sort of like these things are pretty good anyway, so try to have them, like, tell us a little bit about what you know.
Yeah. So, and actually I want to make one little point about the luteal phase, if that's okay, before we.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
So one thing I want to mention in, is about movement or exercise, where in the luteal phase, with, you know, our body being a little bit more insulin resistant, you know, inflammation being a little bit higher, overall the body's just a bit more sensitive. So that is a time period where often women are going to feel better with focusing on like lower impact movement, you know, maybe more like strength-based, you know, movements, doing things like bar, Pilates, going on, you know, walks, the real high intensity stuff, you know, the Barry's boot camp, the HIIT training, you know, long, you know, stimulating runs, things that are basically like jacking up your stress hormones and cortisol, are likely not going to feel super great. I think sometimes in the moment they can, you know, produce endorphins and make us feel good temporarily, but oftentimes the downfall of that is just a lot of significant disruption with blood sugar, you know, more inflammation, and kind of setting us up for a not great period or menstruation phase, which is what we go into next. So I think, you know, it's not that you can't do anything, but I think it's really important to listen to your body during that time, particularly if you are a woman that does, you know, experience a lot of symptoms around their period, or during their period. As an experiment, like, you know, peel back on exercise and you know, maybe change up the types of movement you're doing to focus on the low impact stuff and see what happens. Oftentimes women feel a lot better once they kind of give themselves permission to do that.
That's a true great point. For sure. I mean, really, really very true. I feel that. And I do try. I mean, sometimes I feel what, you know, like I said, some of that guilt. But I always do feel better when I don't push it. And I can't. I actually really find that when I do try to go against what my body is trying to kind of cue at, I can't. Like, I can't lift heavy. I can't do, long, stimulating, high intensity things. I just like, I go to do it and I'm like, oh, I see. Okay. And I'm glad that you went back to this. I have one more question about progesterone. What might somebody who is actually too low in this hormone feel? What might there be a sign of? Because I feel like some of the conversations I've had in the past months, for whatever reason, have been around lower levels of this hormone. Mm-hmm. What might some telltale signs be? And is there, like, can you take this? Can you eat something? Can you do something to help? What might that look like?
Yeah, so low progesterone levels are, it's something I see often in practice too. And I think it's becoming, seeing that type of imbalance where, you know, progesterone is low in the luteal phase, I feel is coming, you know, becoming more common based off our modern lifestyles and stressors. So progesterone production can be low for a variety of reasons, but some of the big kind of like diet lifestyle things that can, you know, decrease progesterone production would be over-exercising and under-eating. One or both. Huge, absolutely huge. I see it all the time. Sometimes it's intentional. Sometimes it is completely unintentional because a lot of women, I think, don't know how much their body requires in terms of fuel and nourishment to function optimally. And, you know, if resources are scarce, typically sex hormones like progesterone are, you know, it's one of the first things to suffer.
So when you say overeating, I'm sorry, when you say undereating, is that overall at large or specifically during this phase or another?
Yeah, at large.
Okay.
Yeah, really at large, you know, kind of, you know, just even kind of chronic low grade undereating can impact progesterone production. Nutrient deficiencies can definitely, you know, impact progesterone production. So like B vitamins are really involved with, progesterone production. So nutrient deficiencies and kind of specific things there could impact that. Just stress. So really, I'm talking about stressors, like physical stressors, you know, in terms of under-eating, over-exercising, nutrient deficiencies, but also emotional stressors, you know, can be a big one. And I know, right? It's like the thing. Stress like is the thing.
Six different things just flashed through my mind at like warp speed.
I know. And it's tough. Like, you know, stress is such a thing in our modern society. And oftentimes, too, I think when we think about emotional stressors, we think about like huge, big traumatic events and not like the day to day grind that a lot of us are stuck in that is actually being stuck in a chronic stress response that over time can impact hormones.
Yeah,
so the, you know, emotional stress, lack of sleep in a chronic sense, you know, can impact progesterone. Those are kind of the big diet and lifestyle things that will, you know, contribute to that imbalance. And when progesterone is low in the luteal phase, that is typically where, you know, pre-period symptoms are gnarly. And that is because, you know, there's... should be a specific balance between estrogen and progesterone in that phase of the cycle. So when progesterone is low, that means we have unmatched or unopposed estrogen. And this can create a lot of unpleasant symptoms. Really anything related to PMS. So it, you know, kind of mood related things are really big when progesterone is low. Skin issues can be a big thing. But it really just sort of amplifies all the not great things that we think about when we think about PMS.
Mm-hmm. This is the phase that people experience PMS.
Yes.
The luteal. So you're looting.
You're looting. I've got a question. What are your thoughts on, like, is, and I know this might be a loaded question, there might not be a direct answer to it, but is PMS normal?
So I'll tell you my thought, my opinion, and it's totally fine if people have differing opinions, but PMS in terms of like the definition of the severity of symptoms, I do not feel is normal. I think it's normalized.
Yeah.
I absolutely think that experiencing subtle shifts is normal. Again, all of these things we're talking about are happening in the body. Of course, we're going to feel different. I think noticing some subtle shifts with, you know, digestion, some subtle shifts with mood, some subtle shifts with energy, all of these things can be very normal and healthy and natural. But things that are disrupting our day-to-day life are not normal. And these are really SOS signals from your body telling you that some things are off.
Wow. That is such a theme in our interviews, Meg, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is. It's such a theme of it's common or it's normalized, but it's not okay. And it's not something that you should necessarily be experiencing and think, everybody does. That might be true, but not everybody should be, nor do you have to. So I when I'm hearing this part of our conversation, I'm really feeling like I want our younger listeners to hold this very close, because you're in for a lifetime, my friend. And you can choose, right? You can choose how. I think that's an interesting takeaway here. The more you know about this, the more you know how you get to manipulate how you feel. Whoa. You are not at the mercy of your doctor prescribing you something. Mm-hmm. If you decide to do that, fine. That's your choice. But make your choice with all information presented to you in a way that really allows you to make the best choice. When you don't have all the choices in front of you, how can you know that you're making the best choice? Yep. And so understanding these nuances, the ups and downs of all of these things. And again, you don't have to be you don't have to be an expert on all of the names and the phases and stuff. You don't have to know that stuff. You just have to know that it's okay and appropriate to see shifts. So actually, if you're not seeing any shifts, would you also say, Jillian, that would be a sign that, like, you know, that's on the other side of not quite being normal?
I think, you know, I guess it depends on the context, in that if the person is cycling and getting their period very regularly, and they're not noticing much of a shift between, you know, phases, pre-ovulation, post-ovulation, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing at all. You know, I think most people, if they're going to pay attention, they will notice some of those things for sure if you are a cycling, you know, woman. So I think most people will notice subtle shifts if they are paying attention.
That's important. Yeah. That's important.
Now, so we want to be conscious of your time. And so do you have any other pressing questions that you want to ask, Kylie? Because I know we went into seed cycling, but I kind of think that's going to need its own episode.
Well, I can answer that fairly quickly if you.
Okay. Yeah, let's hear it. Yeah. Let's give us a quick lowdown.
Yeah.
So what is it, and should people pay attention?
Yeah. So seed cycling, for anyone that's not familiar, it's kind of this concept that by eating different seeds at different phases in your cycle, so seeds that have varying, like, phytoestrogen, fatty acid, micronutrient components, these seeds will provide, like, optimal support for what's going on hormonally during that phase and will help to balance hormones. There's no evidence to support that. It is incredibly overstated. And, you know, I think it just, seed cycling, the idea of it sort of gets perpetuated by, like, social media and bloggers and people like that. I'm not saying that seed cycling is a bad thing. There's no harm to it. But in my experience, we all have a lot of things going on and a lot of things demanding our energy and attention. And I want, you know.
That is what I wanted to hear you say. That's amazing. Because I think it really is one of these things that you see a fancy post about and you're like, oh my God, this is the golden ticket. I'm going to feel amazing. And I'd love to, if it feels fun, if it's like you're eating these things anyway and you decide, like, okay, I guess I'll have pumpkin seeds this time and sesame seeds that time, then, like, go all about it. Fine. You're not going to cause any harm, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
A seed is a seed at the end of the day. It's still very nutritious and beneficial and blah, blah, blah. So that's great. Okay. Again, for our younger listeners, you're going to be seeing this stuff, especially if you listen to this, things are going to be heard and all of that stuff is going to come through your feed now. So just be mindful to do it if it feels cool, but it's not going to be the thing that is the magic wand and to, like, change a bunch of stuff for you, right? It's exactly. It's just not the way that it is, as far as we know anyway, with the research that we have.
So. Yep, exactly.
Jillian, my God, Health Plus, complete.
Yeah, if you have 2 minutes, do you? Or,
okay. Oh, yeah, I'm not rough.
Okay, I think I would just love you to leave our listeners with, like, your favorite tools for tracking their cycle. Because I think the bigger overarching message of this is, like, we want to try to get to know our bodies and try to see how we feel during this. So I want to leave our listeners with some tools about how they can do that.
Yes. So in terms of tools for tracking, I'd recommend downloading an app. I like the Kindara app. That's typically my preferred app. A lot of people like the Flow app and, you know, find that really helpful. So download, you know, one of those apps and just start being observational, collecting some data. If you notice some shifts, plug it in. And, you know, over time, you can kind of look back and reflect on that and see if there are patterns to how you're feeling. Both situations or periods of time where you're feeling really good, and periods of time where maybe you're noticing being more symptomatic, and just really using that information to kind of guide you with next steps and how you can support your body better.
Awesome.
So good. Yeah. So good. What about books, actually? I like this question, Meg. What books are, because I know the ones that we might read as practitioners, and sometimes those are too much. It's too much for the average person who just wants a general understanding. So what do you, and you can throw a mix of everything in there.
Yeah, so I think the two that I would recommend would be, I think the first one would be The Fifth Vital Sign by Lisa Hendrickson-Jack. I hope I said that right. Lisa Hendrickson-Jack. I think that's a book every single woman should read. It's really going to help you to understand your menstrual cycle, help you to understand potential options. You know, if you're interested in that fertility awareness method or something else, I love that book. And then in terms of kind of diving more so into how to support your body throughout different phases of your cycle, I really like the Alyssa Vitti's In the Flow book. It's meatier. There's a lot there. You know, and I think I, with any of these things, I always encourage people to, like, take what you need from it. Not everything is going to apply to you. Remember, it's for the general population and so many different types of people are reading it. But that's a great one just to learn more about the phases and foods that you can incorporate in a really supportive way.
Amazing. That's awesome. That's the second time that we've heard that. Yeah, agreed. Yeah. Second that. So also one final tool is you. Like, you, this is what you do, right? And so tell us and our listeners about where they can find you, how they can work with you, what tools you have to offer for somebody who's really looking to commit to this process and wants to learn more about their body.
Yeah. So, you know, for anyone just kind of looking to dip their toes in and get started, you can follow me over on Instagram at Jillian Greaves RD. I share lots of tips. I'm often talking about, you know, menstrual cycles and, you know, all this stuff that we're diving into today. On my website, jilliangreaves.com, I have tons and tons of free resources in terms of articles, you know, blog posts, recipes, things that you can dive into to learn a little bit more. And then I also offer, you know, one-on-one functional nutrition counseling services and programs, you know, that you can also access and learn more about on my website.
Very cool.
Jillian,
thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I so wish that you were here. I feel like I need to squeeze you.
I know. This was so fun. I feel like we could talk for ages.
Honestly, don't miss us. We will. We will keep you on here forever.
Meg, I feel like I really dominated the questions because these were my questions, and I have a little bit more awareness because it's easier for me to understand the things that I'm reading. That's another piece of this. When you go to read about this stuff, you know, kids are looking at words and what the heck is this? I don't even know what this is. I'm not going to keep reading this. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
And so that's a huge barrier. But these are my, I mean, this is the first time. Okay, let me tell you this. Almost 33 years old. This is the first time, in all seriousness, that this amount of information has been presented in a succinct way that made sense, that accompanied things that you can actually go close your phone from this episode and go do. Or, you know, go into the kitchen and say to your parents, hey, can you go buy some Brussels sprouts, right? Like, these are the things, like, it's never given. It's normally, it's like shoved down your throat in a way that doesn't make a lick of sense. And you're not told what can you actually do to support the only body that you have to live in. And not understand what's going on. It's just crazy. No. So for that and that alone, thank you. Both personally and to the women that I know are going to be listening to this personally that I know. Mm-hmm. And the young women in my life who I'm going to shove this episode down your throat. Madison, this is coming for you, okay? You know, like it's just so important. It's so important. And this is the stuff that matters. This is the stuff that matters. Yeah. And you want to know something? The reason we don't learn this in school is because your gym teacher isn't taught either. They're not supposed to know how to teach this. There's nobody there. It's a void. And so, you know, the same way that we talk about doctors not having the ability to sit with you because the system doesn't support that, it's exactly the same thing.
Yep.
So yeah, we should be learning this, but who is it that's going to teach it? Who's responsible for learning the information? You know, my gym teacher, like I said, the best she had to offer was penis. That. Isn't that wild?
Oh my God. So, yeah.
Anyway, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
This was so much fun. Thank you so much. So yeah. I know we say this a lot, Kylie, but like, I think we need to have a part two.
We do say
I do too. I would love to do a full episode on like how to properly track your cycle, just because I know from tracking my own cycle, there's so many things. Like, I know if I have a few drinks the night before, all my BBT is going to be off the next morning, or like, it's like just so many, it's wild. So I think that's another thing that could be very fun. So, all right.
Until then, Jillian.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Curious Women. If you love our show, you can support us by leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And if you know someone else who would really love our show, please share it with them too.